days, and then I'll, in that time, I will busily pull up the agenda on another computer.
Got it, got it. On the screen, I have Jeffrey, Richard.
Jeffrey's present.
Great. Richard's present. Jim Sayre.
Present.
Jill Brammer.
Here.
And Janine Mortimer.
I'm here.
Great. And just for staff, we have JR on the line and Erica and myself. And the third item. Yep, call the audience.
Call the audience. Yeah, I can see it now. Is there any audience present? If you're here and you want to talk, please identify yourself as being here and we can listen to what you have to say.
And I don't see anybody on from the public or anybody else.
Neither do I, and I'm not hearing anyone chime in, so we'll move to the next item, which is your report, Tom.
Great, thank you, Richard. For the administrator's report, two items. The typical parking service agent staffing update. We recently had two employees leave, so that leaves us with six openings. If you recall, what I reviewed with the commission last month was we conducted what we call reallocations of positions. So we have two types of positions available for parking service agents. They are divided into ones and twos. Ones start out on a little bit of a lower hourly wage than twos. Twos have a little more responsibility. And what we did was reallocate all the ESA one positions to twos. So anyone on our staff that was a one as of last month has been promoted to a two. So they get a little bump in their hourly wage and a little more responsibility. And any future openings we have going forward at this time, we're going to advertise as PSA twos. So we still will have the PSA one position available to us in our back pocket if we want to go back to the kind of the ladder approach with the promotions. But we feel that with recruitment and retention, going to PSA twos is a worthy experiment, I'll call it. And we're hoping that that will keep the retention levels high. Currently with six openings, we just opened up those positions. They're open, and we're going to schedule, hopefully we're going to get a lot of applicants, close that on February 24th. So we're going to give about 2 weeks for applications to come in. Interviews will be scheduled for March 13th, and we're hoping to start new hires on March 24th. We're hoping to get as many folks on the certification list as possible. That means they're good to hire as far as we're concerned. But we can only really take three positions on at one time due to our staffing levels and the amount of trainers that we have. So we're looking to get at least three folks on board on March 24th if everything goes according to plan. And then if we have additional folks on the certification list, we will offer them positions with just a later start date, potentially 3 or 4 weeks after that, to allow that first group to get their training in and get on their feet. So, hopefully by, March 24th, we'll have three of those at least. And then hopefully mid-April to late April, we'll have a full staff. We have 11 total PSAs available to us. So that's our staffing update, and I'll take any questions. Okay, hearing no questions, so I'll move on to a residential parking program update. And what I wanted to do with this group was give you a little snapshot going back 6 months regarding the types of tickets or citations issued and a breakdown in the neighborhoods. And I have to thank JR for all the hard work coming up with our report that I want to show you. So if you can see the screen here, we have a nice visual here of the citations by neighborhood. And you can see that towards the right of your screen as it ascends, the main business districts take the cake here with in terms of citations issued. So downtown, which is our core responsibility, over the last 6 months, we issued over 3,600 citations, followed by main gate around the University of Arizona entrance at about 2,500 citations. West University, with all the activity that they see, and all the restrictions with the permit programs, they also have meters in their neighborhood. So a lot of different applications in West University for our programs. They come in at over 1,600 violations. Armory Park, similar. They not only have residential and meters, but there's meter exemption permits in there as well. So a lot of activity around Armory Park, around 1,200 violations. Fourth Avenue, just under 1,000 violations. And then it goes down from there with Rincon Heights receiving over 700. You can see out of area at 665. That's everything outside of our 15 neighborhoods in the program. So you'll notice, 665, that's quite a bit. Those require a little bit more time from our staff to drive out to those locations. They can be anywhere in Tucson city limits. So, some of those are close by, but some of them are also in the east side of town. For example, Rita Ranch, we get a lot of calls out there. So 665 out of areas. Pi Allen at 614, North University at 494, and then it goes down the list. But you can see we are active in all the neighborhoods. And that's just a little snapshot where you can see where a lot of our calls and time is spent. And I wanted to give you an idea. I'm going to zoom in here a little bit. Yes, I'm sorry, go ahead. Didn't see your hand there, sorry.
So are you coming to CCRC tonight?
Yes.
Okay, this is good information to provide to them.
Okay, I can have that ready to go and show them.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. Always love attending the CCRC meetings. It's a good group. And then moving over to the types of violations, this is a little small to see. I'm going to zoom into the descriptions here, but we broke out these violations by type. So I'm just going to zoom in here to the numbers and the types of violations we're issuing. So these are the codes on the left, and this is just a short description on the right. Moving up, so I started around 150 violations issued for 6 months, but we have angle parking violations, stopping or standing on the sidewalk, parking outside of marked spaces, special event permits, so violations of the special event code. So I just want to point out this does include a little extra time. Basically, football and basketball games comprise the special event scenarios that we see here in the neighborhoods. And GR, correct me if I'm wrong, but those are particularly in the Sam Hughes and Rincon Heights neighborhoods, right? Those are the only two neighborhoods where we have those special event permits. Okay. I think I heard you say yes. It was hard for me to hear. So what we do on football and basketball games, we put an extra body out there when we can, after hours or when those special events take place, and we're out there in the neighborhoods enforcing that. 166 issued for vehicles that are unattended for 7 days or more. We have a lot of violations for parking within 20 feet of a crosswalk, within 5 feet of a driveway. We have a big jump up for permit parking. Those are our residential permit parking violations. We issue quite a bit of warnings. So our staff has the flexibility to issue warnings when appropriate. Our main goal is to educate, and that's where our warnings come into play. So we make sure that the staff can use those warnings as applicable when needed. So we're not just issuing citations at willy-nilly there. Parking meter spaces or parking outside of a meter space, 300 there. So we're really strict on that. You got to park within the space marked. Sometimes those are next to our Sunlink streetcar tracks and the Sunlink is really quick to let us know, you know, when they have a car obstructing the streetcar, so we get out there and issue citations, and Sunlink actually tows them if needed. Parking in red zones, ADA parking is a big one. In our loading zones, you got to use hazard flashers. It's listed on the signs. So we issued over 325 hazard flasher tickets. Parking in no parking areas where there's signs posted. 661 for parking on private property. So we get calls for that, and we enforce parking on private property. Parallel parking, 18 inches from the curb. Quite a bit there. That's a huge jump. So that's a big number, over 1,200. So when folks don't park within 18 inches of the curb, we issue citations. That can also impede the streetcar and impede traffic potentially.
And that would also include parking wrong direction.
Oh, thank you, JR.
Yeah,
oh, nice. Cool. Got you. And Richard, I'm sorry, you have your hand up. And Richard,
I'm hitting the speaker instead of the microphone. So can you define the red zone a little bit more?
Okay, yeah. We do have curbs that are marked red, but they don't always have to be marked red. Where those red zones are labeled, whether it's near an intersection or along the street where there's necessary need to not have parking. JR, I don't know if you want to add anything to that, or to describe red zones.
Yeah, most red zones, if we're citing for a red zone, it's because it's not clear. You know, most red zones are going to be, if they're too close to a fire hydrant, our agents will cite, rather than a red zone, they will cite for being too close to a fire hydrant. So if these are red zones, these are red zones that are, a lot of times they would be downtown, that would be at a fire department connection that's not really illegal to park in front of, but we mark them red so that they have access to those. So when it comes to a red zone, red zones are something that are cited just because it's red. For the most part, we will try to look for the reason why it's red and cite a vehicle for that reason instead of the red zone, because the red is a courtesy.
So I guess my question is, like, so how close to a corner can you park? How close to an alley can you park? There's another one of the violations that actually specified the distance was five feet from a driveway, I guess.
Yeah, correct. So it's 5 feet from a driveway on the approaching side of an intersection. It's 30 feet on the departing side of an intersection. It's 20 feet. You would not see those in a red zone. You would see them as 20 feet from a crosswalk. So line 45, 277.4 is 20 feet from a crosswalk. So that's at the departing side of an intersection. So instead of citing for a red zone, we would cite for that 20 foot.
So does that include implied crosswalks or no? Only marked ones, explicitly marked?
No, every intersection, whether it's marked or unmarked, there is a crosswalk.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Who's responsible for maintaining red zones, as in painting them?
That's one reason why we don't do a lot of curb painting, is because it would be up to, we would have to mark, and it would come out of Park 2's on budget for that.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, we have received several requests over since I've been here. I know that a couple neighborhoods have requested red zones, and we'll take a look at that and mark them. But I think we want to be careful marking them everywhere, because that could lead to a lot of costs. And Jim, you have your hand up.
Yeah, I was just a curiosity question. For the loading zones, you mentioned they have to have their flashers on, so they could get a violation for being there too long, but also, even if they're there within the time limit, if their flashers aren't on, they get a citation.
That's correct.
And the flasher, what is the intent of the flasher? I'm curious why that's important.
Yeah, just to make sure they indicate that they're going to be there temporarily. They're not parked there for an extended period of time. JR, if you want to add anything. I'm sorry?
Assuming you still talk to them, so you're still going to enforce the time limit, regardless of whether or not they have their flashers on. So what is the purpose of the flasher? Is that just a historical ordinance?
It's always been every loading zone, whether it's a freight loading zone or just a passenger loading zone. They all have hazard flashers mandatory. I don't know why that was done when that code, when the hazard flashers were created. I don't understand why that was done, but yeah, it's been every loading zone that we have.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Got it. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. And Richard, do you have your hand up?
No, I thought I took it down, but apparently I didn't.
No problem.
I don't know how to change it. I'll hit it again. Is it down now?
Yes.
Okay. Sorry about that.
No, that's okay. And just continuing, we also issued 1,879 for expired registration. And then our big one was expired meters, over 4,400. So the majority there is expired meters. So, just wanted to give you guys a snapshot of the type of activity we're seeing. And, we'll take any other
questions. Neighborhood reinvestment. Oh, questions, sorry.
I have a quick, comment. This is Jill, about the red zones. I don't remember how far back it was, but I know that certain neighborhoods, that's what they used some of the reinvestment money for, was having their curbs painted. Or they would get permission to like do it themselves. And I remember there was a one time when like FAMA kind of took that on. So I wonder if there's just, if people are requesting, if there's alternative ways so that the money didn't have to come out of Park Tucson.
Yeah, Jill, great question. There's, I believe, two districts where we don't do the curb painting, and that would be in the Downtown Tucson Partnership Bid district and the FAMA area. FAMA has painted in the past on 4th, and DTP paints curbs in their bid. So that would be yellow loading zones and red curb zones. And JR, correct me if I'm wrong with any of that information.
No, that's correct.
Thank you. That just wanted to make that little comment.
Yeah, no, that's a good comment, Jill. Yeah, it's great because downtown, we don't have to worry about that. I think DTP does that twice a year, if I'm not mistaken. So they keep those fresh, and curious to see how the FAMBA bid shakes out to see if that's going to be included as well. We'll be watching that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, Richard, I think you wanted to move on to number 5, a neighborhood reinvestment program projects update.
The FAMBA bid. I mean, that's pretty far out, isn't it?
I think so. I don't have an update on the timing now, but it's going to take quite a while. Yeah, months and months, if not longer. I'll try to get an update for you guys. And Jeffrey, I know Casey Anderson did a great presentation at the last CCRC meeting. I'm just not recalling the timeline for that, but I want to say it's over a year.
Are they working with Crystal on that at all, or do you know?
They did. You mean Crystal Moore from DTP?
Correct.
I know that they have language from the DTP bid that they're using for some, suggested language in their own. And I'm not sure if there's talk about combining those areas or expanding the DTP bid. I'm just not that familiar with that. I'm going to make sure to educate myself, and I can give an update during the next meeting if you'd like.
Yeah, I'm curious. Dean Art met with Crystal. That was an interesting experience. I'd like to follow up on that.
There's been like a lot of kind of contention in the bid discussions. So where it's at right now is after the last meeting about it, Ward 6 is sort of intervening. And there was two options, to my understanding. Ward 6 might be providing a facilitator for the conversation, but then also I think they were just going to kind of look into contracting with the partnership to maybe bring just the cleaning, maybe trash services and, I don't know, into the 4th Avenue area. I can't imagine anything would happen for about 2 years from now because there's a lot of, again, like contention for whatever reason. The process is going to go super slow.
Yeah, I do recall, Jill, now that you mentioned it, Casey said that they did hire a consultant, I think to the tune of about $70,000 to start the work on this.
That is correct.
I'll make sure to gather some information, and I might even ask Casey to present an update. I'll see if she's game for that. I think she's been doing a few of them, and she's getting better and better at them too. So I'll give her a jingle and see if she's interested in that. Sorry, Richard, was there any other questions?
No, I guess we're moving on to neighborhood reinvestment.
Okay, great. Just a quick update. Sam Hughes completed their project. I was going to try to get photos. I just didn't get them. But they did a lot of sidewalk repairs. That project is complete. We're going to be paying for that soon when we get the invoice. So Sam Hughes worked with Jesse Soto, got that complete. And now Jesse's focused on Armory Park. Armory Park is yet to commit to the entire scope of their project. They're working out some kinks within their neighborhood on the desired areas, but they're also doing sidewalk repairs. And we're going to remind them that they have to get that complete by the end of June and paid for by the end of June. So they probably have, you know, three months or so to really get that started and completed. So that is the full committed amount of money that we Park Tucson committed for the fiscal year. They're both $30,000 projects to take our $60,000 total into account that we have a cap on. So we're just going to monitor that and then open up additional project opportunities July 1st. We have not heard interest from any other neighborhoods at this time. A couple months ago, West University just asked about for an update. I provided them an update, and it sounds like West University might be, getting a project in the works to promote and within their neighborhood and to ask for a project. So that's just a quick update on the reinvestment program.
Yeah, I have something to add about West University. I mean, they got money from Capstone, a lot of money from Capstone, and they're doing sidewalk repairs right now. They managed to get the city to do it, and they're paying the city with the money they have. So, but this evolves to a question. So all these sidewalk repairs, a lot of them are about damage from trees. And so they go in and they blow up the sidewalk and they cut the roots and then they put the sidewalk back in the same place. Is there any discussion within TDOT as a larger organization about what could be done about street trees and the damage they do to sidewalks so that we stop just using a very carbon intensive material over and over and over and over again, like that storm in August took out so much sidewalk? Anyway, that's just kind of a comment question.
Thank you, Richard. I'll reach out to Jesse Soto with the NTMP project and ask that question, and I'll get you some information on that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Next agenda item. Is there any other questions or comments on the neighborhood reinvestment? Okay. Special events, event permit program. Your turn, Tom.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. So wanted to raise a comment that was made in a CCRC meeting last month, and actually a couple times ago, in their meetings from Sam Hughes regarding women's basketball games and permits for women's basketball games as they're becoming popular. So in two neighborhoods, Sam Hughes and Rincon Heights, we have the special permit program. And what we discussed this internally, and what we talked about was the process in order for those blocks to add basketball dates, basketball game dates to the permit program. When the men's basketball season starts, we affix signs on those blocks in the program with all the dates of the basketball games, stating that additional enforcement will be conducted. And these are in those two residential permit programs. So if you have residential permit on the block, and it's also designated as a special event permit, your residential permit covers that special event permit. So in order to, that was entered into via petition process. And we're thinking that we would like to offer that same type of petition process to be consistent. So we're thinking 75% of the blocks would be needed within all those neighborhoods. And you can see here, JR prepared a list of all the blocks in the neighborhoods that have the special event permits. And so there's 33 blocks in this program. And if we'd ask for a 75% petition, 25 of those 33 blocks would need to petition in. So if this group is okay with us doing that approach, Jeffrey, I'd like to kind of brief the CCRC meeting group tonight on this subject as well.
Absolutely. That's okay. Bill will be elated.
Okay. Thank you. And JR, if there's anything I left out, any nuances or any misinformation I just spoke about, what, if you have anything to add.
No, I just think that for each of those blocks, we would want 75% of the block base within the program. So we want 75% of that block base to say, yes, they want to change. And then of that, we need 75% of the total block. So we need two different 75% to be able to do it. And that's just keeping with how we do our petition process. They need to know the signage will change when it comes into, if we do include women's basketball games, we will no longer put specific dates. It will be more of a, you know, November to March during home basketball games enforcement change rather than specific block or specific dates, because that's too many dates to put on one sign. And then from a personal thing, you know, we really need to look at, if we're including another 18 to 20 women's home games, we would need to look at, do we increase the price for that permit to include those additional games for the additional enforcement that's going to be required.
Yeah, that's a good point, JR. The amount of time and effort that we spend out in the neighborhood is probably exceeding. We know it's exceeding the revenue that we're receiving from the permits. So we would have to come up with a price point, and that would have to go through executive management approval, and I believe mayor and council approval to change a rate there. So so that's a big factor as well. Thanks for bringing that up, JR. So that's essentially what we're going to brief the CCRC meeting about. It's 75% of the block to make that block part of the 75% for the entire program. So two 75%, and we need 25 blocks to petition in order to go forward with this. I won't take any additional questions on this. Okay.
So, school parking, neighborhood impacts. Do we want to talk about your proposal, Jim? I see you're on the call.
Yeah, I'm happy to start with that if you'd like.
Is that okay with you, Tom?
Oh yeah.
Okay, go. It's your your time, not Jim.
Got it. So, you know, I've vented about this a few times, and so forgive me, but we've talked and talked and talked, and probably many years before I joined the commission, about the impacts of Tucson High on the neighborhood, and there really just hasn't been, there's been a lot of meetings and maybe this traffic calming thing or this change, and maybe we'll have additional police officers come at the beginning of school, and it's all kind of, it's helpful and it's healthy discussion, but it's not really gotten any change. And so I had this idea as we were also at the commission meeting last month talking about employee parking for the merchants on 4th and just how it's challenging for them to find a consistent option. So my idea is that we propose that on the west side of the football stadium, Tucson High Stadium, is that 3rd? I think it's 3rd.
Yes.
That become hourly parking, whether it's a meter or a machine or whatever, but it become hourly parking some hours of the day, whatever that is, 8 to 3 or 8 to 5 or whatever your other meters in the area are, just to be consistent maybe. And I know that just that alone is already contentious, but you do that and maybe you only do it 9 months out of the year, and you are either creating revenue that my proposal would say goes directly to a dedicated staff member that's doing enforcement around Tucson High in the neighborhoods on those meters, and maybe there's slash ambassador or something. I don't know if there's a job description that would fit that, but they could kind of be like a liaison between the neighborhoods and the city. Or if all of a sudden nobody wants to park there because you're charging, which I doubt would happen, but if it did, then all of a sudden you have some spaces freed up where you could sell, you know, some sort of monthly permit to employees at a lower cost or something like that. And then that still would have to be maintained and controlled by this person, which I did a calculation of what I would anticipate the revenue from an hourly parking to be, and then I cut it in half and then only use 9 months, and it's based on your hourly, your new hourly elevated rate for an enforcement officer and their fringe. It feels like it could just pay for itself and it could be its own little sort of sub business there. And then maybe the spaces after 5 become only permit parking and you sell some reduced price employee permits. And that's kind of the gist of it. There's probably lots of other details that would need to come along with a formal proposal. That's all I got.
Anybody want to talk about that?
Yep, sorry. I was on mute. I apologize. Thank you, Jim. I appreciate the proposal. If it's okay with you, I'd like to reach out after and get some more details, write this up for us to look at all the details. One of the areas we're looking at to dedicate for employee parking on 3rd Avenue, the very north section, about 10 spaces on the north section of 3rd Avenue, we're looking to make permit only. Now, that area is already included in a predetermined zone for student non-commuter parking. There's an established rate already for that area. So I just want to point that out, that we're already planning to do 10 spaces there. Just from basic observations, I know that a lot of students do use that parking third next to the stadium there. I definitely hear what you're talking about in terms of a sub-business and things like that. We'd have to see if that is cohesive with the way we operate and with any the rules. Yeah,
and I mean, maybe it doesn't have to have its own little account, but the way you see, just as an operating budget in general, you have an added expense of a person, but an added revenue of hourly parking.
Right.
And it doesn't have to necessarily sit out and be, a sub-org of your budget, but when you're talking about it, that's how you justify the ability to do it. But right. I think it needs that operationally, it would need that person to be, they don't go off when you're short to cover, whatever other district. Like, they would have to kind of be dedicated to this zone, and maybe you could experiment with the idea of it being a slash something of something more than just enforcement, maybe a collaboration with another department in the city that is, community relations sort of focused.
Right. I totally hear you. And I was thinking the same thing when I first looked at the issue, and my instinct is to throw people at it, right. To have people out there. I know from, prior issues we've had over there, it can get quite dangerous for only one or two people to be by themselves, dealing with the drop-off or pick-up scenarios with all the violators and the drivers. So we want to make sure we're if we look at something, to do it in as safe a manner as possible. I know it can be very overwhelming on one or two people there.
Sure, and I imagine, especially since it's not super enforced now, right? So once it was under control, that might be a little bit better, but I still get your point.
And I would make sure, if we do something like this, to engage with Tucson High School, talk to them about it. I know we've asked Tucson High to do something similar with Ambassadors, just to keep the traffic moving and to keep the curbs clear. And they have come back, said that they don't have funding for that, which is exactly what you're talking about here. Having revenue cover some of these expenses you're talking about that would need to be covered. So I completely see where you're coming from. I understand the plan on a high level. JR, I don't know if you have any comments or anybody else.
I just have the same comment I'm always going to have. It just comes on the tail of you saying, like, it's not super safe for agents to come out and ticket. I can't even understand how then the whole neighborhood isn't just shut down to that kind of traffic, because imagine how dangerous it is for one lady to be trying to park her car. You know what I mean? Like, for the situation to just continually be, like, kicked down the road when there's an acknowledgement from a city body that it can be quite dangerous for even two people to ask a car to move or to approach for a ticket, I think is indicative that it's, like, a super-duper problem that has to be addressed in some way. You know what I mean? And if that just makes it a no-access area, then so be it. I share Jim's frustration even more. Like, it's just, it's been over a decade that this has been trying to be addressed, and it's simply gotten worse. And that's my comment.
Thank you, Jill. Totally understand.
I can confirm Jill's experience in that I've been physically threatened by people, and I'm not a small person. At one point, if the principal of the school had not intervened, I would have been in a fist fight. Someone would have assaulted me. But what's weird is women get in your face.
Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, like crazy.
And I know where you live. you know, that's really comforting once a week, you know, when you're just saying, hey, can I park here? I need to unload my groceries, you know?
So
it's wild.
Did you mail it?
The person for that job would have to have an extraordinary skill in dealing with people.
Okay. And it's regarding, like fighting a ticket or?
Yeah, that would be kind of a specialized position there for sure.
Yeah.
No, thank you for these comments. And basically my update on this subject was going to be that I can assure this group that I'm not going to just go away in terms of engaging Tucson High School. I'm going to re-engage them next week to talk about reaffirming the current procedures and policies in place. I know we have a couple, 3 more months left of the school year, and we want to end the school year as safe and as convenient, as easy on the neighborhood as possible. So my plan is to re-engage 3 schools, the International School, Mansfield, and Tucson High, to just make sure they understand we need their support. We need them to educate their students and
parents. I'm not sure that has a quick future
and,
yet.
To encourage
so
them
if
to
you
be the best neighbors
possible.
So if
you did send it
possible.
To us and we forwarded
so,
it to
that,
the court,
that was essentially going to be
they
my
don't
update
have it
to,
in their system.
To re-engage.
Yeah, you might want
to
try
to,
back.
To let them know
either on Friday
I'm, we're still
or on
keeping
Monday.
Our finger on this. And we want it to get better. But I hear the group, there's been too many years of no action.
Oh, it's
and we
good
have to
go.
Do something. So
your infraction date was on
with Jim's,
January
28th. We'll definitely take a look at
and
that.
And you have
and,
a whole 30 days to take
ideas,
care of this
to
get
to address
court.
It.
So we have until February 28th.
Any further comments on this?
No, just thank you.
So,
yeah, that would have been
future agenda items. And I think it's
so,
very
but the
likely
thing is,
that
is we would have received it here. We would have did what we
I'm
needed
not
to
sure
do with
the
it,
timing,
and then we would have forwarded it over
March.
To city court.
And I think since
what I'm saying
the
is
residential
city court isn't showing that it's
is
in their
late
system
in the,
yet.
Later in
okay?
the month.
So that's why
this
I'm saying give us like another week.
Meeting.
And then we should show that.
I know that the last.
If they don't have it by next Monday, then I will go ahead and email
was
the court
my, had,
and tell them
was my last
this
meeting.
Citation
I won't make it
is
to the
trying to
be, off the commission
disputed.
Anyway,
and
anybody have any future agenda items?
Well, I'll miss you. We'll all miss you, Richard.
Okay,
yeah,
Friday. And if we don't have anything on Friday, try again Monday. At the
absolutely.
Latest, okay? And if we don't have
thank
that money,
so
we will go
time.
Ahead and email city court and say, hey,
and Richard, first,
this
I appreciate
person's trying to
all the
dispute
support
their ticket,
and
you guys don't have it in your system
been
yet.
Instrumental
can
in
you please
helping,
add it?
In my career, so thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome, and I appreciate the attitude
you can
brought,
either speak to Erica Garcia.
Doing your job.
Or Denicia Compas.
It's been very helpful.
Okay. You're welcome. Bye-bye.
So, if there are no proposed future agenda items, I'm going to say we're adjourned.
Thank you all very much, and thank you again, Richard.
Yes, yep. Thanks, Richard. Thanks all.
Thank you all.
All right.